If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed. I have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison, one of your hosts.
I'm Adam Pranica, another host.
We should get some more hosts.
Yeah, my intro sort of left it open to the idea of another host.
Who would we bring in? Will Wheaton?
Whatever decision we made, people would hate it.
Yeah, I feel like it would either be hated or loved.
People have gotten used to us, I think.
I met Mark Gagliardi the other day.
Gags!
Of We Got This. He was really nice.
Yeah?
Those guys have had Will Wheaton on their show.
Was this at the costume party that you attended?
Yeah.
What was Mark Gagliardi dressed as?
I didn't ask him. I think maybe like a Sweeney Todd thing or something like that.
That's tough, man. When you're at a costume party and someone is dressed up as something, you don't want to ask them who they are, right? Like you want the costume to be good enough to have told you itself.
Well, here's the thing. It seemed to be a very good costume. Like it was like real stuff. It wasn't the cheapest polyester thing imaginable. It wasn't a polyester suit with black and white stripes called Juice Demon because they didn't license Beetlejuice. It was like a real costume. So I feel like that's even more hurtful, you know?
Yeah.
Like Stuart Wellington from the Flophouse was dressed as a jail inmate, you know? Obvious costume. Dan McCoy was there. He was dressed as Sherlock Holmes, and he had the full beard that Data rocks. And I was like, are you Data on the holodeck as Holmes or are you Holmes?
And he turned and walked away.
Yeah, pretty much. If I hadn't crowded him into a corner so that I could breathe on him. that's what it would have been. Well, Halloween stuff, super timely with this episode.
Yeah. People are really going to appreciate that.
Should we get into this and get off this stale-ass topic?
Why don't we? Let's turn it on over to Season 4, Episode 12, The Wounded. And Ben, this is the beginning of Star Trek O'Brien, a brand new show that we didn't know we started last week.
The Enterprise is doing some mapping near the Cardassian sector. And this is the first time we're hearing about Cardassians.
Yeah, if they were so important, why haven't we heard about them until now?
Yeah, exactly. Another, much like the last episode we did, there's a lot of retroactive continuity at play in this episode.
Yeah.
Furthering of the storyline that O'Brien and Keiko never met before they got married, because there's an opening scene where O'Brien is like playing with his weird Japanese food, and he's like, what the fuck is this stuff? What about, like, and it's supposed to be breakfast, but it's like, you know, I guess her traditional food from Japan, and he's like, I don't like any of this stuff. I've never even heard of this stuff. What is it? What about bacon and eggs and biscuits and gravy? She's like, what is that stuff? I've never heard of that. He's like, really?
You guys are
in your 40s. You're not 20, you know? This isn't your first time in space.
And not only
you
that,
live with aliens.
This isn't the first time they've had a meal together either. This whole scene supports the arranged marriage theory because, like, how many breakfasts have they had together before now?
Crazy. I'd had breakfast with my wife 5,000 times before we got married.
Also, Ben, like,
that's more days than we were together I'd had that many breakfasts.
I feel like you spring the interesting food that you grew up with trick. Like, that is a date 7 move. That is here's a deep cut for me and my family.
Mm-hmm. Can you hang?
Yeah, why don't you check this out? This isn't a thing you spring on someone after you've married them. This feels like a trap, O'Brien. Get out. They just got married, and all of a sudden he's eating, like, plankton?
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess a lot of the episode is sort of about O'Brien, like, coming to terms with the other. But this is a very ham-fisted metaphor for that in the context of his own marriage. It just is, like, so fucking crazy.
It's not a good way to tell that story because you would hope and assume that in the future, like, relationships won't be this fraught. Like,
yeah.
Why did he marry a woman that he does not know?
It's the mind boggles.
Yeah.
It truly boggles. It is so fucking crazy. I mean, and it's not just that, like, he doesn't know her. Like, she's from a different culture, and he is so turned off to the idea of experiencing any part of that. Like, my wife's cultural tradition is very slightly different from mine. And there's, like, lots of negotiation that went into, like, how we were going to deal with that in our marriage, you know?
I think as far as storytelling goes, we're 2 episodes in. I have no idea why he loves her. And I think that's really important. Like, all we see are their differences. We see her willingness to leave him at the altar. Like, what is this about? We love O'Brien because O'Brien's O'Brien, but this decision by him seems awful. It seems like he's in hell right now.
Yeah. So they're mid-meal when the ship starts getting bangers dropped on it. And they cut to a nice tight shot of O'Brien's face so he can drop the most obvious line in Star Trek history.
Something's wrong.
He's just had breakfast bangers dropped on him. Now he's getting the real thing.
Yeah. The captain gets on the radio and says, everybody get to your battle stations. This is not a drill. And it turns out they're being fired on by a Cardassian warship.
Cardassian ship preparing to fire again, sir.
Increase power to the forward shields.
And Picard and Worf are talking to each other about how to address this. They're like, well, we're supposed to be, like, the peace treaties is still a thing, right? And they both sort of look at each other like, yeah, I can't really explain why we're getting fired upon. And Picard's like, well, we should probably do that thing where we fire back but don't try to destroy them. We fire back with the goal of disabling them.
Yeah, which is nice when it works and happens to work this time. They knock out the shields on the Cardassian ship, which has the effect of causing them to stand down because they know they'd be taken out if they went any further. So I guess we're led to believe that this Cardassian warship is no match for a ship like the Enterprise. Which is always like if you think about, like, what it would be like to be in a war in space, like, wouldn't the abilities of the ships be, like, super critical to your decision on whether or not to go to war in the first place? Like, if the Enterprise completely outmatches one of your warships, don't you just, like, not fuck with the Federation? Because they have lots of Enterprises. Right?
Yeah.
Like, Like, what's the level of technology here? Are they, like, no match for the Enterprise, but if the hood was there, they would be able to go toe-to-toe?
I don't know. There's a lot about this that doesn't quite work neatly.
What's wrong, Adam? You look sort of defeated.
I don't know. You can feel like this is a choice, right? You can choose to go along with what they're giving you, or you can just full stop it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. I'll
I'm not.
I'll
I'm not
suspend my disbelief.
I'm not criticizing your lack of belief suspension at all.
Okay.
Because it's so easy to do on this show.
Well, the Cardassian gets on screen and he's looking real, real fugly. He's got like a weird cage around his face, and he's just completely drenched in loaf, like lots of loaf in all of the wrong places. And
he and the rest of the Cardassians appear to have giraffe necks, like really long necks.
They got long necks with weird like veins coming off the side of them, big thick veins.
What an interesting thing to cast for. Like, we need an alien, but what we need are long neck people. Like, measure your neck from the base to the chin. No cheating. Make sure you start at the shoulder.
Yeah, when people are measuring for length, they often, you know, take one end of the tape and put it a little further back on the body than they probably should.
Yeah, yeah. You got to be honest. When we bring you in for casting, we'll be able to tell.
when we sit you down on that black couch in that nondescript white office, we're gonna know. The Cardassians are upset because a Federation ship called the Phoenix has been going around blowing up Cardassian transport vessels, and this is Gulma Set, and he's like, listen, like, if you want to act like we have a treaty, that's fine, but you shouldn't be sending your ships around killing us. So as far as I'm concerned, the treaty is over. And Picard is like, hold your fucking roll, dude. Like, let me get to the bottom of this. I'm going to talk to the boss. Like, give me an hour. And which is like, you know, the Cardassian doesn't have much choice on this, right? Like, he's going to get blown out of the sky if Picard feels like he needs to stay and fight. So he's like, all right, you got an hour. And I will
give you an hour before I allow you to destroy me. Like, great strategy, guys.
I will give you one of your Earth hours before I am vapor in space. So yeah, Picard calls up the Admiralty. Was this the same guy that we called Admiral Reginald Vell Johnson?
It was the same, yeah.
Yeah. He really does look like Reginald Vell Johnson.
He's great. I love him.
Yeah. And he really, this was kind of a performance, too. Like, they gave him more to do. Like, they gave him some emotional stress to sink his actorly teeth into.
And he totally police captains him at the end. He, you know, he delivers the news that he needs to deliver, and then he does that thing where he leans into the FaceTime and he's like, look, look, Jean-Luc. When you go to the first, it goes out of focus briefly
and then, like, goes back and forth a little bit to find how to crisp up on his eyes.
Yeah. You know when an admiral calls someone by their first name, it's time to be real?
Mm-hmm.
And this admiral's like, look, Jean-Luc, shit is about to get crazy. You're the only guy out there who can solve it. You're welcome to take off your badge and go street justice on this if you have to.
Yeah, do what you got to do. We cannot afford a war.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it sounds sort of like the Federation is in the opposite position of the Enterprise here. Like, their shields are down and they can't take a hit from the Cardassians. But I don't know. The whole timing of this war seems so weird because they say it was like a year ago, but we've been following this ship for like 3.5 years now and have never heard about it. Like, you would think that the flagship would be involved if the Federation was at war, right?
You would think, but if the Enterprise is across town, like in a totally other area, they aren't in the stadium district where these Cardassians are. They're uptown. They're in the financial district doing their exploration.
Yeah. They're more than one subway line away, you know. They would have to transfer, and that's just too much hassle.
Yeah. It's as if the writers were like, I'm not sure if we can hold a viewer's attention with just this Keiko and O'Brien conflict. I think we may, in fact, need to introduce a new alien character.
Yeah. So they beam over Gulmaset and a couple of his buddies. And,
hey, Ben,
this is the, what's that, Adam?
Did you notice that one of Gulmaset's buddies was played by Captain Rice of the Drake?
No.
Same guy.
Dang.
This time they covered him up with some meatloaf.
Yeah.
Which was a good idea. You remember Captain Rice, right? From the
Starship Lollipop.
Yeah. From Dildo Security.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy's best buds with Echo Papa 607.
That's right.
This loaf is, let's talk about it. I mean, the Cardassians are in very cool uniforms. They look like kind of tough, you know, like battle uniforms. They've got these weird grills around their faces, but the loaf, it just looks sunburnt and fucked up. Like it's definitely like, you know, like they built on this a lot in later Cardassian episodes, but these guys look like they just rolled around in some loaf.
I think they look great. Like real solid. And Gulmaset, like the lead Cardassian guy, he's got sort of like trucker stash a little bit. But the middle part is shaved. The part that's under the nose is gone, but he's got like the parts around his lips continue to grow in kind of a fun way.
Yeah, I think it's the only time I can think of where we see a Cardassian with some facial hair.
Yeah, I dig that.
Yeah.
It's a good look. It's a good different look. It's not one of those throwaway aliens with a little bit of nose putty. Like, this is a real thing.
Yeah. So they're off to find the Phoenix, and the Phoenix is like pretty far from them, and they don't have any other ships that they can spare. But there's a lot of kind of tension between Picard and the Cardassians as they, you know, attempt, like, Picard is like, listen, like, we are trying to put your mind at ease, and we're trying to do the right thing about this Starship Phoenix blowing up your ship shit. So, like, I'm going to keep you in the loop on my decision-making process. Like, you are my honored and respected guest. Like, I'm here to preserve the peace, but the Cardassians are having a very tough time extending trust to the Federation. And this is mimicked in a small way by every time Chief O'Brien is around them. He like grumbles and looks off in the corner and just is very uncomfortable. Like, there's a scene where they leave the room and Troy's just looking at O'Brien as he clearly goes through some personal shit about the Cardassians. He fucking hates them. He hates their guts.
This was one of the great uses of Troy, I think, on the series. This 10 seconds where O'Brien beams on the Cardassians. The Cardassians walk past as Troy escorts them. And as soon as they leave the doorway, Troy looks back at him like, shocked, like, oh my god, O'Brien, really?
Yeah, I just picked up some hate in your heart, dude.
Yeah, and so often they go verbal with shit like this, but this was like some nice nonverbal character building that was effective and good.
It was great, and it was like, it's a great moment that they've really had to like build to. You know, you really have to know what Troy is about.
Yeah.
And know what O'Brien is about. Like, and if you look down at your phone in this moment, you would have missed like a really great little moment in the scene in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Have you got to find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So the idea is these Cardassians are gonna ride shotgun on this mission they're on, which is to go find the Phoenix and shut down whatever rogue mission they're on.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix isn't responding to their hails. They're too far out to really do anything about it. So they gotta beat feet and get out there before Phoenix and their captain does any more damage.
Yeah. So they're on their way, but they're still like very, very far from the Phoenix. They're like hours and hours away when they start picking up the Phoenix closing in on a Cardassian transport. And there's a Cardassian warship nearby, and Picard is presented with this Sophie's choice where he's got to either give the Cardassians the transponder signal for the Phoenix or allow the Phoenix to destroy this civilian transport. And Picard chooses to give the Cardassians the Phoenix's phone number. You know, he's like, yeah, like this guy is acting outside of the law. So, you know, we got to do whatever we can to stop him. And there's a lot of dissent on this decision, like, especially from Worf. Worf is like pretty freaked out that Picard orders him to do this.
Relay the prefix codes of the Phoenix to the Cardassian warship.
Sir, they will be able to dismantle its shields. The Phoenix will not have a chance.
We cannot allow Maxwell to ambush that supply ship.
I was kind of on Worf's side on this. Were you?
I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call. I definitely don't envy Picard having to make it, because it's like a whole starship lies in the balance. But it turns out to not make a big difference, because the Phoenix winds up destroying both the Cardassian ship and the transport. And Gulmaset is like fucking beside himself. He is so upset about this.
The way that they watch this happen is so oddly sanitized, right? They look up on the viewer and it's like the Pac-Man version of a video game.
Like, yeah, it's very like 8-bit sound effects and just like little dots blipping around.
The Phoenix is firing photon torpedoes.
We are told that hundreds of people have died because Gulmaset tells us so, but the only representation of that we see on screen is one dot disappearing.
Yeah,
it's an interesting bit of how they demonstrate this tension.
Around this time, Picard is informed that the only person on board the Enterprise that's ever served with the captain, Captain Maxwell of the Phoenix, is O'Brien, who used to serve under him on a ship called the Rutledge. And so Picard goes and talks to him, and O'Brien's like, listen, the captain lost his family to the Cardassians, and we were in some pretty nasty shit together. Like, we went to defend some colony, and it was pretty ugly. Like, they killed a lot of women and children. He's like a great captain, but like, you know, we saw some shit that we can't unsee.
Did you think it was wild that O'Brien was Maxwell's tactical officer?
I did.
How do you get on the tactical to transporter chief career track?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a real backslide, right?
It really does.
Like, was there a ceremony where they took his sword and broke it over their knee and took a pip off his uniform?
He's sort of on that Steven Seagal from Under Siege career track, where Steven Seagal is the chef on the battleship. Like, yeah. Like, what you want if you're Picard is a Steven Seagal on the transporter detail, right? Like, yeah. Someone you would never suspect?
Yeah, except for, I mean, he doesn't ever use his hardened battle skills.
You never see him break an arm into a compound fracture.
Yeah, if there's like a super soldier beaming up who starts to take out every security officer in the room, like, you would want O'Brien to have a kata that is gonna completely rip this guy apart, right?
And they don't specifically say it, but I mean, a couple of times O'Brien refers to some pretty fucked up shit that he's been through, some pretty fucked up shit that he's seen. And are we to understand that that's the reason why he stopped doing tactical, why he chose transporter duty? Because Because the worst thing he'll ever see is a transporter accident.
That's interesting. I mean, I feel like a transporter accident can be pretty grisly.
I would agree. Like, I'm not sure that's much better.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing about being a transporter chief is it's sort of like being a mover where, like, you're never getting credit for all of the transports that go right.
Yeah.
But you're in big trouble whenever one goes wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you scratched the armoire that my grandfather gave to my mother, she gave to me. I'm not paying you. You're not getting tipped on this job. You know.
Maybe that's why O'Brien married Keiko. Maybe the end game for him is working in the Arboretum. Maybe he just wants to get out of this shit.
Yeah. Swords to plowshares, man.
Yeah. But what we're talking about is roughly 10,000 times the amount of character development that O'Brien's actually given.
Well, there is that scene where he goes and, like, sits down and 10 forward with the spindlier of the two Cardassian Glens.
Yeah, he apologizes for a blowout he has in a turbo lift earlier, where he's just a real dick to the two visiting Cardassians. Later on, he runs into one of them at 10 forward, and he's like, "Look, bud, sorry about what happened back there, but you got to understand. The first thing I ever killed in my life was one of you people."
Yeah, it really is, it's a scene that really does a head faint. Like, you think that it's about O'Brien kind of turning over a new leaf and getting more conciliatory toward these guys, and it ends with him storming out of the room, like, coming just short of, like, dumping his beer on the guy's head and saying,
"It's not you I hate, Cardassian. I hate what I became because of you."
Yeah, real
fucking
dark.
Fucking intense.
Do you think he's talking about his marriage, though? Like, "You made me do this. All I want is a fucking good breakfast.
I could have married a woman that I'd met before, but now this."
"No oatmeal. Never again."
They finally catch up with the Phoenix. And the Phoenix is a Nebula-class ship, which I guess means that it's very similar looking to a Galaxy-class ship, but it's got this huge weapons platform on top of it. It's like a warship, right?
It looks like a Pontiac Fiero. You know, it looks like a rear-engine two-seater, like Honda Del Sol type starship.
Man, those are some 2%ers, Adam.
I don't think so. I think people are going to love those references.
Okay, all right.
If you love those references, be sure to write in to Jordan Jesse Go at the Maximum Fun Network.
So they beam over Captain Maxwell, and he's just all grins. He's like, "Hey, Will Riker, attaboy. Hey, look at that. It's Miles O'Brien, one of the best tactical guys you got in the fleet."
Like a man who did not just murder 700 people.
Right.
He's living with it.
Yeah, he's like high-fiving, giving people back slaps. And he maintains this jovial mood until he gets up to Picard's ready room. And he's like, "Hey, John Luke, great to see you, buddy." And Picard's like, why don't you sit down?
He goes in for a four-step handshake, and Picard's like, "No. You're in detention, pal."
Maxwell is showing up with a pizza and a 2-liter of Fanta, and Picard is in full Chris Hansen. He's like,
"Why don't you have a seat right over here for me?"
Picard's like, "Is that Mike's Hard Lemonade?"
What's going on here, buddy?
Maxwell's doing that thing that I feel like I have done from time to time, which is like, you know you're in trouble, but you're playing it off real cool. Like, what are you talking about? Everything's fine, right? There's no trouble here.
Yeah, and this is an interesting scene because Maxwell is very much presented as being from the, like, fact-free community, where he's like, "Yeah, that space station that I blew up, that wasn't a science station, that was a war station. Those transports, they're transporting They're transporting arms. They're, you know, the Cardassians are getting ready to launch a new attack. This peace treaty is bullshit. It is a pretext so that they can rearm themselves and get themselves ready for a new line of attack. And Picard is just like, show me one scrap of evidence. It's like the, you know, anti-immigration people, like, saying that immigration is out of control, and then you find out that, you know, illegal immigration has been net zero for the last, like, decade. And you're like, right. What the fuck have you been talking about this entire time, dude?
They do a great job of illustrating his truther thinking, but the part that I was missing was how difficult it would be to go rogue if you're the captain of one of these starships, because in a lot of movies that tell stories like this, you know, like the rogue commander, the rogue ship,
yeah,
there is the conflict between the crew and its rogue captain.
Yeah.
And I would have liked just a moment of that conflict, just to see that, like, you know, and instead of that, what you get is the cult of personality that Maxwell cultivates, right? Like,
yeah,
he is so great to be around that, of course, his crew falls in line behind him.
Right.
But man, even a moment of a first officer going, like, really?
I would say our third comic book is going to be the, like, Hunt for Red October that took place on the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Where Maxwell is Eurameus, and, like, let's see what's his first officer down with this? Is the rest of his crew in or out? Like,
yeah.
Like, this looks like a big ship. It looks like it's probably got as big a complement as the Enterprise, maybe a little smaller, but, like, they've got as much saucer and as much drive section as the Enterprise. They're just missing a little neck, you know?
They've got just as much saucer in the game as anyone.
Yeah. So I wonder, you know, what their conversations were like, you know? Was there a secret chef who was a party stooge, you know, spying on all of them?
And I get it. Like, it's expensive to shoot another bridge scene, to cast an entire other bridge or whatever. Yeah. The only part of the Phoenix we see is Maxwell's ready room. Like, I understand that, but man, I would have sacrificed breakfast with Keiko and O'Brien for two lines of dialogue that yeah, illustrate that conflict.
It's like literally like he's alone on the ship. Like, that's how weird it is.
But again, like, this is also in keeping with everything we've seen about how the Enterprise operates too. Every time Captain Picard gets taken over by an alien, he is able to take the ship and command it wherever he wants. Every time when Data's beacon was activated, he stole the ship. These ships are very stealable. It's a very
they're like a 1997 Corolla, you know, just yeah, like the most stealable ship.
Yeah, there's an imbalance in, like, the command structure of how these ships operate that no one seems to learn from.
Yeah, this scene ends with Picard sending Maxwell back to his ship, saying, like, I'm not going to compromise your dignity by throwing you in the brig now. Like, you can go back to your ship and command it as we go back to Starbase, and then we'll deal with you. But, you know, the writing is on the wall that Maxwell is probably going to get court-martialed. And they're on their way back when the Phoenix veers off course and goes and starts flexing like it's going to destroy another transport from the Cardassians. And this is like another scenario where some stuff from past canon would have come into play, I think. Like, why didn't they Wrath of Khan the Phoenix at this moment? Like, send in the command code and shut it down, you know?
Yeah, I was with you on that as well. And this is a very subtle blip that Picard takes note of when he's like, hey, Worf, what's on that ship? And Worf's like, I can't really tell. Like, there's a bunch of static. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's Maxwell's like, you gotta believe me. It's full of weapons.
It is full of Syrians.
It's on its way to Iran.
Yeah. Oh, this is a post-election episode. We don't even know what the fuck is going on.
We could have been shut down by now.
Yeah. Jackbooted thugs could have come and taken our podcast away.
Yeah. That would be how we go out, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a blaze of glory.
Not by cease and desist, but by... new president.
I heard what you said.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So O'Brien's on the bridge at this point because Picard has brought him there. He's like, look, you know this guy, right? I don't have anyone on the bridge who can tell me what this guy's thinking. And he sort of like does the head thing over his shoulder at Troy. Like, like you're the one who can really get inside Maxwell's head. Is this guy gonna throw down on this Cardassian ship? And O'Brien's like, hell yeah. Like, yeah. He's a guy who means what he says and does what he means. And O'Brien's like, look, I happen to be privy to some transporter technology that heretofore I have never disclosed, which is that I can beam people through their shields because I know how the shields, what is it? Like, there's some sort of shield regeneration that happens every certain amount of time.
Cycle.
Yeah. And he's like, look, I can beam myself through that half a second blip and get on that ship. And Picard's like, if you think you could talk him down, go ahead and do it. So he does.
Yeah. Picard is looking for a way to not have to blow up a very valuable piece of Federation materiel here. And
even though he has the ability to do that by hitting their email password.
Right. So O'Brien comes through. Like, there's a very intense scene where he talks Maxwell off the ledge it felt like the end of like an off-Broadway play a little bit. Like, they sort of, you know, admit that they have some undealt with frailties surrounding their experiences in the war, and Maxwell has been sort of still at war despite the fact that it's over. And
he has that line that goes like, I'm not going to win this one, am I?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a resting thought for me more often than not.
Yeah.
I feel like I really felt Maxwell at that moment.
Yeah. Every time my wife gets mad at me, pretty much goes through my head.
You just wish someone would disarm you in that moment?
Yeah, I wish somebody would beam through the shields. Give me a heart-to-heart, you know?
Yeah, sing some songs with me.
Sing a couple of songs.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, if I could just have a dark night of the soul before it all ends.
Yeah.
they put Maxwell in
the pokey. This has been Star Trek relationship cast.
They put Maxwell in the pokey and they turn him around and head back, the Cardassian ship remaining unblowed up. And Picard has a final McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
With Gulmaset in the conference room, where he's like, listen, like, we stopped a disaster here, and I think we both really want peace, but I think we also both know that Maxwell wasn't totally crazy about what he was saying. Like, those ships definitely were concealing arms movements, and that science station was not in a place where anybody has any science to do. Like, you guys were up to some shit, and now we know that, and I'm glad we've averted a war, but now we also are going to have to keep our eyes on you, because that was not cool.
Would the conflict in the story have been as strong if Maxwell didn't have the past with the Cardassians? Because I feel like they kicked off the episode with Maxwell's one of the great captains, like,
yeah,
in the fleet. O'Brien's like, I've had the good fortune of serving with two of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why didn't, like, it shades in the characters and the story to get all the PTSD backstory, which is good, but man, if he didn't have that and he still went rogue, I feel like it's almost more intense that way. Like, it's a great captain who is making a decision that he thinks is right for no other reason than that.
Yeah, I mean, the episode is called The Wounded, and I think that it's sort of about the damage that's been done to O'Brien and Maxwell and some of the other characters. I mean, some of the Cardassians, I think, are sort of damaged as well. But you have a point that it would have been an interesting, I don't know, I mean, maybe we'll get that episode also. They can, if we can retroactively have a long bloody conflict that we've never heard of be written into the universe like this, like, what's stopping them from having that episode also?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We're playing the long game here. This is sort of like the Klingon storyline that was mm-hmm. introduced last season. Like, this is another thread we're throwing out into the distance that we're going to chase down.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I did. I totally did. I don't know why I
you
thought...
You had a pained look on your face for a second there.
I don't know why I had to think so long about it. I think because the frame around the episode was O'Brien and Keiko, and that was so weak. It's like taking a great painting and putting it in a shit frame. Like, the main A story here, I thought was first rate. I totally dug it. I'm a little confused about how much Keiko and O'Brien we've been getting the last two episodes, as if they are main characters, which I'm almost positive they are not, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're spending time with them that used to go to Commander Riker, and he's been a
Troy
total no-show. I don't even think Geordi was in this episode, was he?
I think I heard him on radio. I don't remember if we even see him, yeah.
Yeah, so it feels like a real inflection point in the series that, like, last episode wasn't a fluke. Like, we're really going to do this O'Brien thing, you guys.
Yeah.
Buckle up. And this also reads to me as, like, this is when the whole show changed. This is when Star Trek changed for me, I feel like. Because mm-hmm. we're doubling down on character and away from whatever shoot 'em ups and conflict that we used to get. Like, the A story on this episode was the conflict, but we're working on character doubly from here on out, I think, both on this show and on the other Star Trek series that follow.
Do you think that this was... Do you think that this anticipated Deep Space Nine? Do you think that they know that they're getting another series at this point, and they're like, let's set this character up to be, like, more interesting so that we can pass the hat to him when the time comes?
I'm so rarely interested in doing any research for this show, but that is something that I am interested in chasing down, is, like, the behind-the-show production stuff about, like, you know, Colm Meaney better be on board for this, because all of a sudden we're throwing him phone books of scripts, like, that he's got to read now. Like, how far ahead of this does he know he's going to be, you know, a featured player versus a real cast member? Like, do we know at this point that we're going to write another series? At what point does pre-production on that show begin? I mean, that's still like 4 years away, right?
No, I think that might start in season four.
Man, I don't know.
I don't remember exactly when, but I think it's not as far away as maybe it starts in season five. But
well, if that's the case, then it would make sense that they would write him. They'd punch him up a little bit before sending him to another series.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they change a lot about him in Deep Space Nine too. Like, they make him like an enlisted man and not an officer. Like, he's a lieutenant, right, in this, but in Deep Space Nine he has no he's an infantryman, essentially.
Boy, O'Brien really gets his revenge on Keiko. Like, she goes from an arboretum to a fucking flower shop on the promenade. Like, like, all of a sudden he's eating a potato corned beef breakfast and she's working at a flower shop. Like, he really leveraged that move back in his favor.
Seriously.
Hey, do you want to check our messages, Ben?
Yeah, let's see what's going on the old message machine.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Captain Ryan, and it is to Chief Engineer Alarcon. and Ensign O'Reilly. It goes like this to my intrepid crew. Although I have transferred command to a lesser captain, it is not a reflection on you. I look forward to serving you again in the future, even though I was clearly the most likely to be voted drunk Shimoda on a daily basis. P.S. Nemesis is greater than Star Trek V.
I would agree with that. I mean, Nemesis isn't good.
I might prefer Star Trek V.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Might just.
I think Star Trek V probably is the one that I enjoy the least on an ongoing basis. This is another one where I don't know whether we're talking about people in the future or time travelers or like a D&D group or something in between.
I think what we're missing in the form is like the... I mean, we have a to and from field, but we really need a what is this actually about field. That'd be really helpful.
Yeah, although I do really enjoy having ones that I'm a little bit mystified by.
I think we're mostly mystified by these.
Yeah. Yeah, generally speaking, yes. So we have one more today from Tom Regan and Clayton Cowles, Their Arms Open. And it is for Sarah Arnold, her birthday approaching. Temba, His Arms Wide. Sarah at D Street. Mr. President at Madison Square Garden. Socath, His Eyes Uncovered. Sarah, Discovering Picasby. Picard and Wesley in a gimp suit. Sarah and Ivan in his. Shimoda, His Isolinear Chips Stacked. Tom and Clayton writing this message. I get it.
They
speak in metaphor.
Yeah.
It's like their whole way of communicating is based around metaphor, Adam.
This isn't a charade at all.
We talked at some point very early on about trying to do a Darmok episode that was all that, and just reading that makes me realize how difficult that would be.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Way more fun than the clip show, I think.
Oh, man. Darmok, it's coming. Sarah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Sarah. Or Sarah. Again, we were not given phonetic pronunciations on these names.
Yeah, it could be.
It's the Kirsten problem.
Yeah, and we were dead wrong on that one.
Yeah, they followed up. So if we've gotten this one wrong.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody who left a Priority One message today. If you would like to do a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal, $200 for a commercial. He keeps the lights on around here.
Lights are on.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I was going to try and like change it at the last minute because you sort of stepped on it. But
my
drunk Shimoda was definitely O'Brien's career trajectory.
Yeah.
I love, so I guess it's just O'Brien. Like, I love that we have just found out that he was like a warrior and was the tactical chief of a starship and like has done like hand to hand murder. Cause I just think of the John Adams cartoon, Chief O'Brien at Work, when I think of Chief O'Brien, you know? I just think of him as like a totally even keeled, like, boring man that stands in a room by himself all the time. And thinking of him as this like wharf guy is just madness.
Yeah, and it's been long enough ago that I haven't really, that I'm not clear on how this plays out, but man, it would be fun to sprinkle that in every once in a while. Like O'Brien's rage. Because he is just like a tub of mashed potatoes to me. Like he's cuddly and innocent. And this dark side of him, it's one thing to say it and have him describe it. It's quite another thing to have him like fully demonstrate the PTSD that he's describing. So maybe we'll get a little
Absolutely.
Bit of that.
Who's your Shimoda?
My Shimoda is going to be given to Commander Riker, who had so little to do in this episode, but there's one scene that I thought was, that just made me laugh. So O'Brien's on the bridge. He's been brought there. He's been brought there to sort of talk Picard through the Maxwell incident.
Yeah.
And O'Brien discloses the magic that he can do with a transporter. And he's going through all this techno jargon. They do a two shot of Picard and Riker at like 37 minutes and 30 seconds. And all Riker does is stare at Picard in a, oh, really? Are you fucking serious? Kind of way. Like his face is like stone, and they hold it. Like they do a cut back and forth between O'Brien and the two shot between Riker and Picard. And Riker just stares at Picard in a, you're not really going to let him do this kind of look, yeah. Right?
Shut up as in close your mouth and stop talking.
It's just a strange expression to me. And it seemed incongruent with the rest of what was happening. That was the only real outlier to me that was Shimoda worthy.
That is what Shimoda is for, Adam.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
It feels like kind of a flimsy Shimoda, Ben. But
that's
all
I
have.
It was good. Somebody actually like kind of ripped into me a while back about my Shimoda's not being as good as yours. So
really? Who would do that?
I don't know, man. It's just some guy. He's like, get better Shimoda's. Your Shimoda's are no good.
Well, I really let that guy down.
Yeah.
That's what I did with that one.
He's your biggest fan, and now I am the captain.
Well, maybe I'll have a better Shimoda on the next episode. What are we watching next time, Ben?
The next episode is Season 4, Episode 13, Devil's Due. Picard fights to save a terrorized planet from a powerful woman who claims to be the devil. Do you remember that, Adam? We've talked about this one a little bit.
Yeah, only in the context of us just talking about it, because we opened a card that had it.
Yeah. Well, we don't have any way to veto it, so...
That's not the one with Famke, though, is it? I'm confusing.
No.
Okay.
The lady does look a little Famke-ish, but... She's no Famke.
She's Famke-esque.
Famke-esque.
That's linguistically difficult to pull off.
Yeah.
I'm not going to even try to say it another time.
Well, we're going to watch it. Sorry.
If you have an issue with that or want to support the ongoing production of our show, you can either contribute or withdraw support of our show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah.
Where you can get yourself connected to a plan that supports us month to month even. Which is probably the best way to do it. You can also do a one-time t-shirt purchase. I don't know why someone would buy multiple shirts, but you could buy a whole bundle if you want.
Yeah, buy a t-shirt every month.
Yeah. You know what? You can do that thing that I did in Victorville where you just buy underwear and then throw them away. Buy t-shirts, wear them once, and then donate them.
Yeah, I like that. If you want to, let's see, if you want to communicate with us online, probably the best place to do that is Twitter by using the hashtag GreatestGen. There's also a Facebook page, a subreddit, and there's now a podcast wiki. Some of our viewers have been collaborating on a Wikia page. It's greatestgen.wikia.com. And it's great. Like, they're going through and they're making pages of, like, running jokes and repeat segments and stuff. And they've got little bios for each one of us. It's really cool. I feel like a good.
I haven't read my bio, Ben. Is that going to be a mistake?
No, I think maybe yours just links to like your Twitter account or something.
All right.
Mine, they asked me to fill in, and I obliged them. So.
Oh boy.
I think a great resource for anybody who's like listening to this and is like, this seems like something I would like, but I don't understand any of the jokes. And doesn't want to go back through the last 84 episodes to get caught up. Go check this out.
It's like a foreign language phrasebook.
Yeah. So there's that. We should thank Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea for our music. And if you want to email us, it's drunkshimoda@gmail.com.
If history is any clue, we'll respond to those emails within 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. We get a lot of them, so it does take a little while to slog through them. But
yeah.
Every so often, one of us will sit down and just, like, peel off, like, 28 replies. You, like, check your personal account and, like, you know, we get CC'd on them, so... It's like, oh, shit, what the fuck is happening? Oh, Adam just replied to a million emails.
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm definitely not on the toilet when I do that.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an evil episode of The Greatest Generation.
Evil. Like the devil.
MaximumFun.org. comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.